Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the Gentlemen Nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many, many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemannerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. The Space Stone, the Power Stone, the Reality Stone, the Mind Stone, the Time Stone, and the Soul Stone. These ancient and powerful stones are being sought after by the mad Titan Thanos for a terrifying purpose. The eradication of half of all life in the universe. Earth's mightiest heroes, the Avengers, have unified to stop this intergalactic threat. And the Gentlemen Nerds are here to talk about it. Welcome back to the Lobot Lounge for our second half of our examination of Avengers Infinity War.
Yes,
part two.
Yes, we're back. Here with us in the lounge, as always, is Mark Finn.
Excelsior.
Aaron DiArrive.
Red Skull still lives.
And I am your host at Emotional Touchstone, Joseph Fotinos. Welcome to the Gentlemen Nerds. All right, where were we? We had picked up pretty much a good portion of our Avengers Infinity War review and talk about. I'd like to now jump to the Vision and the Scarlet Witch.
Yes,
when,
good one.
When we encounter them again, they are having what amounts to a lover's rendezvous. They've escaped for a long weekend. This has been building for a while. Now, gentlemen, you'll have to tell me how you feel, but I personally, while the Vision and the Scarlet Witch is a classic Marvel couple, we know what happens to Wanda and the Vision in the comics. We know how that goes. In the films, in the MCU, I go, that's cute, I was just never very invested in them. How do you guys feel?
I agree with that. I appreciated the scene in the two scenes in Civil War that established that Vision at least was very interested in Scarlet Witch, and she, while maybe not being interested, certainly was not repulsed by him. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a problem with, as soon as I saw those two scenes and I saw how careful he was around her, yeah, I realized that that's what they were setting up. It's probably the only piece of shorthand that really only works if you know the comic history. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a problem with it because I do know, you know, their long storied on again, off again thing through the comics, and especially the most recent Vision comics, which are brilliant. Really? I didn't mind so much because I liked the passage of time, and I like the fact that he's finding out a way. He's at least on a molecular level appearing more and more human. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's nice to see Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen in those scenes. I think that they have good chemistry. The characters never snap my radish. Aaron, what do you think?
It worked for me. I mean, I think they, from the moment they introduced the Scarlet Witch, she's an outsider. She's been held as a prisoner. She probably feels very isolated. She has not made a lot of connections that I could tell with people around her, with the exception of her brother. And then when he died, I did feel that she was kind of like, gosh, what's going to happen to the Scarlet Witch? And I think they did a good job in Civil War of showing you that, well, God, she's probably spending a lot of time with Vision. Of course, you know, Paul Bettany. So he's gentle voiced and he's handsome and he's gentle with her. And so I'm just like, okay, yeah. I see. And of course, I knew where they were going with their relationship. Yeah. Yeah. So for me, it worked. I think we needed those scenes in Infinity War where they're bonding, where the romance has actually blossomed because of course, how it's going to end. So it worked for me. It didn't have to be certainly it worked for me as much as, the Black Widow and Hulk
Right.
I thought both of those were handled equally well. It wasn't a passionate, torrid romance between the two of them, but I bought it. I'm like, okay, I can see these two developing a bond.
And the last time that Scarlet Witch, speaking of Banner and Natasha, and the last time they saw each other before the Age of Ultron final battle, she tells him, "I adore you, but I need the other guy," right? And pushes him off the ledge. He turns into Hulk. That's literally the last time she sees Banner.
Yes.
Until she walks into the room and Banner's there, and they have a very awkward hi, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. And even, you know,
so fraught with meaning. Hello, Bruce. That look.
That's why given that we were allowed time with the two of them, with Wanda and the Vision, it worked.
I seem to remember her having more of an accent.
The very beginning it has come and gone.
I think that was
always the case. It was most pronounced when we first met her.
Yeah.
And by Infinity War, she pretty much had ditched it.
Yeah. She had no accent. Okay. Well, they're having the end of their weekend and they're talking about staying, and it's very sweet and cute and everything like that. And they notice on the TV of a closed store, they see the TV playing, and oh my gosh, there's a big metal donut in New York, and there's people fighting, and the Avengers are there, and oh, we have to get back. And then suddenly, and without reminding me very much of Bishop being attacked from behind by the alien queen, and also in the original Avengers when Loki stabs
Coulson. Yeah.
Coulson. Yeah. Suddenly, Vision is attacked from behind and pierced through by Corvus Glaive and tossed around. And Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight are there. Of course, they've tracked the Infinity Stone in the Vision's head. Corvus Glaive's blade apparently has prevented Vision now from phasing. He makes that announcement early on, so that we go, well, why doesn't he just turn, you know, semi-permeable, or and why doesn't he just go into solid mode or whatever? I mean, he can't do anything anymore. It's pretty much short-circuited him. Convenient and appropriate for the scenes that follow, because Wanda is basically doing her best to defend. They're all in defense the whole time, and these two children of Thanos are doing a good job in making their life hell.
Mm-hmm.
Until, and God help me. Come on. There's such good moments here where it looked kind of hopeless. Our two heroes are backed up against the fence, and then there's a sense of something, and everyone looks over, and this train's passing, and behind the train, someone's standing there, and it's just glorious, and it builds, and the train passes, and he steps, and Corvus tosses the blade. He catches it, of course. It's Captain America. And I thought, oh, we're going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Cap is here.
Yep.
Now, mind you, this is Captain America, not the Vision, not the Hulk, not Thor. It's Captain America, who, while it does have superpowers as Super Soldier Serum, he's still technically not like the strongest Avenger.
Right, right.
Yeah, when he shows up, I want to stand up, wave the flag, and sing the Star Spangled Banner, and it's going to be okay. He's there, and he's never going to back down. He's never ever going to back down. Yeah. And so they show up. It's Cap and it's Scarlet Witch. I mean, Black Widow and Falcon, and they just wipe the floor with these guys. Oh my God, that's awesome. Yep.
They've been training in secret, presumably. We get the impression that they've been on the run this whole time doing covert ops.
Yeah.
And so, they don't have to fight clean. They don't have to fight in the open. So that's a cool sort of a, you know, it's sort of implied, but I think it's awesome. You know, they've all got – Cap's uniform is dirty to the point of being almost unrecognizable. So.
Yeah. Yeah, the star is missing from its chest as well.
Yeah, that's on purpose. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I think the lead in into that also worked very well for me with you know, Banner bending down and picking up the phone, you know, and going through and saying, there he is. There's Steve Rogers. And so from the moment you see that scene and he dials it, you know, okay, they're going to show up. But I'm fully in agreement with Joseph. The introduction of Captain America in that scene is fantastic, and handled so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Falcon, who's one of my favorite characters, believe it or not, in the cinematic universe. I love Falcon. And so they really just make such an impressive entrance and work together so well that I feel to feel sorry for Thanos' children. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to get their asses kicked.
And they do. I love watching Proxima Midnight and the Black Widow go toe to toe, and she's matching her. She's matching her toe to toe, and it's skill. It's not strength augmented superpower. It's just skill, and that speaks to them. You know, highly. I mean, imagine if the Hulk had the fighting prowess of Captain America.
Right.
Instead of just smash mad, it'd be terrifying.
that'd be scary.
Yeah. I mean, because Cap's gone up against so many different superpowered, augmentedly strong creatures and monsters and villains and goes toe to toe and stays with them. And it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. So, so we're reunited on that point. Where do we go? Cap says home. Now, I thought when he said that, I thought they're going to Wakanda. But no, they go back to Avengers Tower. They go back to the Avengers base, if not the tower, but Avengers base,
right,
where we see Rhodey, War Machine, in a virtual meeting with Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross and some other suits, still complaining about the fact that the post-events of Civil War, Cap and company are on the run, etc. We have a reunion there of sorts, and that's where Banner shows back up and sees Black Widow again. So
by the way, that is a moment, and I know they had to hearken back to Civil War and to say, hey, look, you know, remember that thing? Okay, well, here it is. That is a moment that I found not unbelievable or out of character, but just it kind of annoyed me because of all the people that would have said, oh, we're being invaded. You know, let's put that Accord shit on hold,
right,
and let's figure out what we're going to do about the spaceships hovering above New York.
Right.
And that would be Ross. Ross would not be going, arrest these people. Are you kidding me?
You're right.
There's an alien invasion, General Ross.
Right.
And you're really asking for the Avengers to be arrested? Yeah. So I see that as the plot needed him to say that, rather than that's what the character would have done and said.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think it would have been an interesting twist to have Rhodey, you know, stand up and be prepared to do what he was ordered to do, but then Ross would be like, "Stand down, soldier," and you know, let's do it because we have
bigger problems right now.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Let's jump to nowhere, because that's where the Guardians of the Galaxy are going to try to stop Thanos from getting a hold of the Reality Stone that's in the Collector's possession. They go into nowhere and they find the place in ruin, more or less, and it's not that bad, but it's smashed up a bit, and the Collector is on the ground. Thanos is standing on his chest, demanding the stone. The Collector claims he doesn't know where it is. And then Drax, of course, sees the man who he blames ultimately for the death of his family and just wants to attack. Wants to attack, so takes a little bit of Mantis manipulation to pause him, to drop him. And it's Gamora who comes in, knives a-blazing, cuts Thanos' throat, stabs him in the chest. I mean, just brutal, assassin, deadly kind of motion, and drops him, drops the Titan.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the whole thing was a shift of reality because Thanos had already obtained the stone and was testing them. He knew they were coming, and it was testing. Yeah. And when, here's the thing I wanted to talk about specifically about that scene. When Gamora thinks she has killed Thanos, she bursts into great, heaping, weepy sobs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's agony for her.
Yep. Yep.
Now, that's telling. That's incredibly telling. And even Thanos said, I knew you cared, or I knew you loved me, or something like that. When he reveals himself.
In fact, I would venture to guess that it is that action. It is Gamora showing that grief, that intense grief, that it's the reason Thanos spares all the other Guardians. He just leaves. He's like, okay, let's go. And so that her grief had a good story impact as well. I mean, so I love stuff like that, right? I love when it's not just, okay, well, she's sad in the scene, she should cry. No, her action has a direct impact on what happens in the story.
Yeah.
So I thought that was very well done.
I agree. Zoe Saldana really hit that scene very well. And the previous, just stepping back a bit, the previous scene was she basically made sure to ask Peter Quill, Star-Lord, that if it looks like something's, if I'm going to be taken, you need to kill me. Yeah. You must promise me, swear on your mother that you would do it. And that's a huge moment there, because as we come to see, Quill hesitates quite a bit.
This is part of the original storyline from the first Guardians movie. For Drax to leap out at Thanos and for Gamora to basically fulfill the promise that she makes of killing her adopted father. These are big deals. And so it's very interesting to see in both cases, a kind of a catharsis, but also in my unified field theory regarding the entire MCU being a metaphor for daddy issues. This is absolutely the biggest one of them all, you know. Thanos, the abusive father, and Gamora going off the reservation from the first Guardians movie, she finally has a chance to confront him in a way that she hasn't been able to hitherto. So I think there's a lot happening in this one scene that's really important. And particularly because she knows she's not strong enough to face him. You know, that's a classic abuser, abusee kind of thing, you know, where, she knows that he's bad, but she can't bring herself to not go with him. You know, that's just, wow. It's heavy stuff.
And it's
played, I won't say it's played lightly, but it's very deftly handled, and doesn't allow you to dwell on it. But as soon as you start thinking about it, you know, there's serious overtones here, man. This is not kids stuff. This is adult things. So anyway,
Thanos handled in such a way that is contrary to the typical megalomaniacal mustache twirling cosmic villain.
Right.
He is given such depth in that scene. You know, he looks at Quill and he says, "I like you."
Yeah.
He leaves them alone. He disappears and they gain their forms back, you know, after he turns them into spiral noodles and such. And again, at every action that Thanos takes demonstrates that he is not what you expect in a big cosmic comic book villain.
Yes.
Right.
And that is why it works so well. Had he responded in a typical cosmic megalomaniacal villain, that scene would have had nowhere near the power that it does. So
looking at you, Steppenwolf.
Yeah, and not just Steppenwolf. You know,
I know, but he's Zod, the current punching bag.
Whoever it is, right? Yeah. It's just like, I am Zod. Okay, kill us.
Your point is well taken. You know, Thanos is not incapable of love. Right. You know, and I think it's that he sees in Quill a kindred spirit.
Yep.
He recognizes that Quill loves Gamora.
And especially because he pulls the trigger, despite the fact that he loves Gamora.
Yeah.
He pulls the trigger. And that is the moment where I think Thanos looks at him and says, that's what I would have done. Exactly. Yeah. I like you.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
It's hard to watch, particularly Mantis and Drax turn into blocks and ribbon, respectively. Yeah. It's a tough moment, but you know, we're talking about now Thanos has the Power Stone, the Space Stone, and the Reality Stone. So, you know, we're heading towards it, and it's starting to look bad for our heroes. Well, Thanos takes Gamora and leaves via the Space Stone, just teleports away, leaving Quill, basically helpless, shooting bubbles, if you will. That's a metaphor. Shooting bubbles out of his gun and powerless to do anything. We get back to the sanctuary, too, where Thanos takes Gamora and very carefully tries to get her to. And the reason he takes Gamora, ladies and gentlemen, of course, you've seen the movie, you know, is that Gamora knows where the Soul Stone is and Thanos does not. So he decides to get the information from her by torturing Nebula. Now, the last time we saw Nebula, she left the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 on a ship with a mission to go and kill Thanos. And obviously that didn't go well because she's a prisoner being tortured by her father, her adopted father as well. And tortured in a really artistic way.
Yeah.
You know,
she's being disassembled. Yeah. It's
it's an exploded view of torture. Yeah.
But when the camera turns around, you see it. But when it was, you know, full on, you didn't notice it until the camera turned and you saw, oh, she's in pieces, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like one of those museum exhibits, you know, this is Nebula.
Yes, exactly. So,
yeah, it was very much like, you know, this is the human body, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, yes, like, exactly. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that was
it was horrible. And you know, he continued the torture until Gamora gives up the location of the Soul Stone. You know, that, of course, leads us to that particular scene. Now, before we get to that scene, I do want to go back to Doctor Strange and Iron Man and Spidey. They've gotten rid of Ebony Maw on board the little ship, and they're heading towards God knows where. They're just on a collision course with Titan, it seems. They're heading in that direction. And Doctor Strange knows that he's got the Time Stone, so he's a target as well. Meanwhile, back on Earth, our heroes go to Wakanda. Because they've got Vision and they need to protect him. They know he's got a stone as well. So they're building their defenses and they're ready to defend. Now we get another glimpse at Wakanda here. Now, for those of you who loved the Black Panther movie, we get those characters once again. Great line of, well, when we wanted to open our gates to the world, I did not expect this. What did you expect? I don't know, the Olympics? Maybe a Starbucks, you know, but instead we have this happening. And here they come. The heroes are there. And we also get to see the Winter Soldier again. He's been in Wakanda minus an arm, but they call him the White Wolf. Is that right?
Yes, yeah, that's
the
right.
White Wolf.
Yeah. Want to go into that? What's that all about?
Well, that's actually from Black Panther. The White Wolf is one of his agent / man at arms guys in the Black Panther comics. And so it's kind of interesting that they gave him that instead of Winter Soldier, you know, because it still implies Winter Soldier, right? The White Wolf is, you know, sort of a winter Arctic kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But I think this was maybe just kind of a name check. That they're gonna swing that into maybe he's gonna have a role in. I mean, if he makes it back from the jump cut, you know, maybe he's gonna be in Black Panther 2. That'd be kind of cool, frankly.
Yeah, no doubt. I'd like to see him.
That'd be an interesting thing. I sort of thought this was maybe gonna go a different way with him getting to do Captain America, like they did in the comic, but hey, why not, man? I have no problem with that.
Anytime Bucky Barnes / Winter Soldier / the White Wolf / Nomad, what's his other alias? He's got another alias, doesn't he? Anyway, anytime he appears with Captain America, he's terribly overshadowed. I think that he's been living in Cap's shadow for the past couple of movies. I'd like to see him branch out on his own and maybe jump franchises over to Black Panther. It would be really kind of cool. He could carry that that role himself and maybe elevate, you know, his status.
I imagine that there is a certain sense of you know, devotion now or loyalty that he feels he owes the Wakandans for taking care of him, for giving him this cool new vibranium arm. You know, so yeah, I agreed. I would love to see him as, in the same way that Falcon is the partner of Cap, I would love to see the White Wolf be the partner of Black Panther.
Panther and White Wolf sounds really cool together.
That would be such a great pairing in a movie.
And he could use all of his spy soldier training. Mm-hmm. He fits right in with the Dora Milaje.
Yeah.
And if they're going to keep the espionage slash secret agent vibe for the second Black Panther movie.
Right.
He becomes the perfect covert operation, you know?
And you're right. It goes in with the motif of, you know, there's the gorilla tribe. There's the rhinoceros tribe. There's the Black Panthers themselves. Now the white wolf. So all the animals being brought together is that, yeah, I'd love to see it.
Well, they're getting set up. Meanwhile, Thor is still on his vision quest to get that god-killing weapon. He's arrived at the forge. He finds the forge is decimated because Thanos, like he does, comes in and says to the dwarves, "I need you to make this gauntlet for me or I'll kill you all." And the dwarf says, "Okay, fine, we'll make you this gauntlet." They make him the gauntlet, and he kills everyone but one, I guess basically keeping his word, and then cripples him by binding his hands into metal so he can, because he says, "Your hands are mine. I don't ever want you to do this again." Mind you, I like the prototype Infinity Gauntlet hanging out in the background. Like it was made from from a 3D printer sitting in the background.
This is what we're thinking. Can you make the design a little more enclosed? We can do that. Great. Like I'm going to go kill everyone while you work out the details.
It's like a maquette. We're going to make this for you. What do you think? That's not bad. I like that.
Yeah, that's great.
Will the big stone be able to fit on the wrist? We've designed it so that it'll do that. Then we're good. We're golden.
That was a terrible thing. Now, Peter Dinklage, of course, you know, just an actor of the highest caliber, and finally makes his appearance in a Marvel Universe movie, not counting X-Men, but in, you know, the actual Marvel Cinematic Universe. He makes quite an impression as the largest dwarf in the world. Etri, how would you say that, Aaron?
I believe it's Etri, but I wouldn't be certain.
But anyway, he's the dwarf who forged Mjolnir and one of the many dwarves on that forge. Yeah. But he's gigantic. He's bigger than everybody. So it's kind of funny.
Because of how big the giants are, to the giants. He would be a dwarf. Yeah. You know, it makes perfect sense when you think about it.
I like that.
Yeah. I love the inclusion of that. I did wonder, there was some speculation at first that, wouldn't have been terrible, but it certainly wasn't my preference, that Rocket was going to build, the new hammer. And I'm like, I guess it's technological, but no, thank God they stuck with the magical origins, with the dwarves of Nidavellir forging the weapons. Cause not only just Mjolnir, they forged, Odin's spear, Gungnir. They have forged every weapon that the Asgardians have ever named and used.
Tyr's weapon, Loki's dagger. The actual Norse myths are rife with that stuff.
They forged in the myths when Sif got her hair cut off. They forged golden hair for her to replace the hair that she had lost. And so I love the introduction of that from the mythology. So I was delighted when they went to the planet and there's the dwarf and he's gonna forge the new hammer. And I'm like,
from the fire of a dying star. That is the perfect apex of magic and super science. It's such a cosmic Kirby kind of a conceit.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a bit of continuity with this, and tell me what you think, gents. When Etri first sees Thor, he laments the fact that all his brothers are dead, and he says, why weren't you there to protect us? Why, as guardians, where were you? How come you didn't come protect us and save us? When this was happening, and Thor said, "Well, Asgard's gone. We were under attack. Blah blah blah." He explains himself, but then, if you remember in the cinematic universe, we see Thanos with the gauntlet a long time ago, cinematically at least, when he says, "Okay, fine, I'll do it myself." And in Age of Ultron, when he takes the gauntlet, he puts it on. We see him do that during one of the extra scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So. Okay, maybe he didn't have it then. Maybe that was a flash forward. Who knows? But it seemed out of place, because if the dwarves were forging the gauntlet for him at that point during Thor Ragnarok, which is what Thor was saying, we couldn't help you. We were dealing with our own stuff. Then how did he have it at the end of Age of Ultron. It seems a little off.
Unless the attack, Thanos' attack, did not come at the same time when they forged the gauntlet. Keep in mind, there was a fake gauntlet in the vaults of Asgard. There was already a gauntlet there. Who created that? Who forged that? Who made that? Right. So, I see what you mean, but it could potentially work if the deal they cut with Thanos was, we'll forge this glove for you. Okay, great. And everything will be cool, right? And Thanos says, yeah, great. He came, he picked up the glove, thanks, takes off, and then comes back later and decides, you know what? I'm gonna get rid of all you. So we don't know exactly the time increment between they deliver the gauntlet and they think they're safe, and then he comes back and destroys them.
Yeah. He could have done it after he took out Nova Prime and them and got his Power Stone.
Yes.
And then done.
That's
he could have been heading back from that when he ran into Thor and the Asgardian. That's possible too. Yeah. It just always, it struck me when he said that, because I thought, wait a minute, I thought he had this gauntlet for a while now. But
it seems like something that a couple of lines of dialogue could clear up. And if there's extra footage in the on the DVD, which there may very well be.
Yeah, there likely will be.
Yeah. So.
It's not a huge sticking point for me. I just kind of go, huh, wait a minute. So Soulstone time. Thanos and Gamora via the space stone travel to the planet Vormir, and there on this high craggy mountain, Thanos says, it better be up there, because that's where Gamora led them to. So they travel up, and what looks like an effigy of the Twin Towers in front of them, God knows, I mean, it was these giant pillars, approaches, you know, the pillars, and then the guardian of the stone appears, who looks very much like a Dementor floating in the air with his robe and his, you know, ghostly appearance. And then he settles down and introduces himself as none other than Johann Schmidt, the Red Skull.
Yep.
Jaws drop, eyes pop, I do a happy dance. There he is, folks, the Red Skull. And Schmidt explains, well, you know, because Thanos says, well, how did you come to be here? And he says, a long time ago, I was, you know, searching for the stones myself and was transported here. And as a reminder, I know all the knowledge that the Soul Stone can give me, but I can never possess it. It's kind of a curse.
Yeah.
So he's been this guardian of the stone waiting for someone to come and claim it and pass this, you know, this test to see if you're worthy or whatever. That's the Skull's role at this point. Speaking of the Red Skull. You may know, folks, that I have touted his return for years now. Yes, he's back. Woohoo! But now I go, well, now what? Because, he's stuck on this planet, but he's pretty industrious. He's a creative guy. I wouldn't put anything past him. Here's the other thing I want to point out is that if the Soul Stone, in order to get the Soul Stone, Thanos is required to, as the Skull put it, a soul for a soul, to sacrifice something that you love. Someone that you love. That's what's required. A soul for a soul. The Skull loved no one, I would guess, except himself, maybe.
Right.
So that would eliminate his possibility of ever claiming that. So, you know, truly for him, it's like, well, damn it, I can't get it. I don't really love anyone. And if I did, they're not here, so I'm screwed. Meanwhile, Thanos and Gamora laughs rather naively. To think that, well, Thanos, the joke's on you. You lost, big boy, because you don't love anyone. You know, meanwhile, Thanos is getting all teary-eyed because he knows what he has to do. And when Gamora sees the tears, I love the Skull's line. He says he's not crying for that. You know, the Skull knows exactly what's going to happen. And that's a tragedy. It truly is a horrible, terrible tragedy because, you know, we see it coming. I don't see how she didn't. But Thanos does indeed love Gamora, and it's tearing him up to do this. Yep. It really is. And again, all hats and kudos off. Josh Brolin is, God dang, he's knocking this thing out of the park, man. He's making me love Thanos. God help me. He's making me love Thanos.
Now, by the way, I have a theory. We were going to talk about some of our theories here.
Yeah.
I actually have a theory that when he says you have to sacrifice something you love or the thing you love more than anything else.
Right.
And then he pauses and Skull says, a soul for a soul. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that that Skull is talking about Gamora's soul. That is not what is taken.
Gamora's
life is taken, but there's only one soul that you can exchange for the Soul Stone, and that's
your own.
Correct.
That's right. Yes, and to sacrifice, and to do that to someone you love, you've got to be forfeit of your own soul.
Which is why later when we see that weird, strange space with little Gamora and Thanos sitting there, it's because Thanos' soul is in the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
That's where he is.
And the Soul Stone was orange, and that scene that we see baby Gamora and Thanos chatting at the end is an orange background. Everything's orange. Yep. The sky is orange. Everything's orange in it.
And it's, I think, very that's part of what will be the reveal in the next movie.
Yeah.
When Adam Warlock or whoever is going to say, you know, Thanos' soul is in the Soul Stone. That is, yeah, that is where it is.
Now, wasn't Gamora's soul in the Soul Stone at one point in the comics?
Yes. In the comics, Adam Warlock could capture people's souls into the Soul Stone. And there's a bunch of them in there. I mean, at one point, basically, Gamora's is in there. He had a companion named Pip. Pip is in there. There's a bunch of people in the Soul Stone that then Adam Warlock finds a way how he can release them.
Right.
And so I think that's how we get Gamora back, obviously, because Gamora will be released from the Soul Stone.
I
don't know that I want to dedicate the, you know, Gamora lives kind of tagline, but I do believe that part of the resolution in the second film will be the release of Gamora's soul and the return of Gamora. And even more, I'm going to go one further than that. I think Thanos helps to make that possible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he should forfeit his...
makes it possible.
But would that forfeit his Soul Stone? I mean, he had to get rid of her to get it. If he brings her back, would it go, oh, sorry, you know?
Yeah. No. I think by the time that is happening, Thanos knows his plan is undone. He knows there is nothing he can do
stop. So
last things he does is go, my child. He makes it possible for her to go.
Right.
That's a theory. That's my theory.
That's an interesting theory. She sure looked broken and laying in a pool of green blood there at the bottom of that gigantic cliff. She looked pretty squashed, although she probably should have been more squashed. But
I will tell you that, you know, we saw it, but we didn't. She may very well not be dead. And it may be the reason why when he uses the power of the Leyden Gauntlet, it cracks. It certainly would make perfect sense for it to crack with the strain, but it could also crack if he tried to do something beyond what it was capable of doing, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a possibility that she is... that she survived the fall.
Yeah.
Both Gamora and Nebula are really tough.
And that said, I mean, even if she did die, presumably the Avengers are going to get the Infinity Gauntlet away from him. And once you have that gauntlet, you can reshape stuff. You can reshape reality itself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The rules are all there. There's nothing that's off the table. Whoever has the gauntlet, we know that.
Right.
I don't know. I think that she's dead. I think she is dead at the bottom of that mountain, at the base of the mountain. In order for him to get the stone, that had to happen.
Yeah.
So
I think in that movie she is dead. In the movie we saw, she is dead. Will she remain dead? No. I do not believe that will happen.
Right. But and Thanos' sorrow about that whole scene plays for the rest of the movie. He carries that weight with him wherever he goes from now on.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he you see it in his face, you see it in his eyes, his weariness, but he's bound, he's determined, he's got a goal. So now, folks, for those keeping track at home, we have the Power Stone, the Space Stone, the Reality Stone, and the Soul Stone. The Time Stone and the Mind Stone are the only two that are left.
Yep.
Time for final battles.
Mm-hmm.
And I say final battles because we are talking two of them. Mm-hmm. Thanos goes to Titan, where he follows the Time Stone that Doctor Strange is wearing over his chest, clasped in the eye of...
in the Vishanti artifact.
Yeah, we don't say that. Meanwhile, he sends his children and an army of four-armed things called Outriders. An army of Outriders to Wakanda to claim the Mind Stone. Meanwhile, in Wakanda, they are desperately trying to remove the Mind Stone from Vision without killing him.
Right.
And they leave it to Black Panther's genius sister to do this. And then the spaceship.
Who given enough time, would have been able to figure it out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But she just had it. She needed the time, and it just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
So one great line that we've heard in the trailers, too, but it's so great to see it in the film, was when T'Challa says, "And get this man a shield."
Yes.
And sure enough, here's Cap. Oh, my God. When the attack starts and Black Panther and Cap are running side by side and they outpace everyone else. It's just the two of them.
It's such a small thing, but I love it that they did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really nice to see that even with the big battle at hand, those little details are being checked off.
Yeah.
So
genius. It's a great moment. Meanwhile, Bruce Banner's still having his Hulk problems. He's been begging Hulk to come out, and Hulk says no. He's talking to him, and at one point they do some neat visuals where half his face becomes Hulk, and he talks back to him, reminding me, and I hate to say it, reminding me slightly of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde talking to himself in a mirror, where Jekyll talks to Hyde, and Hyde's reflected back and talking back to him. And I hate to bring that up because, boy, was that a bad movie. But that level of true Jekyll and Hyde-ness for Hulk, I really do think that we're looking for Professor Hulk. I think we're going to get this, folks. I think that the two of them are melding together so well now. And whereas before it was, you know, Hulk hate Banner, Banner, you know, you like Banner better than Hulk. And there's that level of disdain for one another, you know. And I think now they're going to start coming together. Banner's begging Hulk to come out, and he's just not. And finally, Banner just says, "You know what? Screw it. I'll do it myself." And here's Banner inside the Hulkbuster armor, fighting.
Which was a nice touch. I thought that was a really nice touch.
Totally. Yeah.
That they put him in the Hulkbuster armor. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the battle's going as can be expected. Again, our heroes are fighting incredibly well. But they're outnumbered. They're being overwhelmed and they're being outnumbered. Meanwhile, on Titan, Thanos shows up and Doctor Strange, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Mantis, I think Drax is there as well.
Yeah. As is Peter Quill, yeah.
And Star-Lord, they've got this great plan. And it's a pretty good plan, I think. It's working. It's doing pretty well to battle Thanos. Mm-hmm. They take their hits, man. What do you guys think? If Thanos has this gauntlet and these stones, it's obvious that he could do a lot of things. But when they're attacking him nonstop, like, for example, when Spider-Man was leaping through magic circles and hitting him, magic punch, magic punch, magic punch, magic punch.
Right.
He was hitting him. He was laying blows on Thanos. And Thanos could have snapped his fingers. Well, not necessarily snapped his fingers. He could have concentrated on that glove and done something, turned him into putty or something. But he was on defense the entire time.
Yeah,
and so I guess you have to concentrate, right? What do you guys think?
I think that with all the stones that he had in play, Thanos was pretty. You know, he might have felt the impact of the blows, but I don't think they were hurting him. And so I think that the Infinity Gauntlet does require will and clarity in order to operate.
Right.
So it's sort of why. You know, the Power Stone is kind of the easiest. And so early on, Thanos goes, you know, head to head with the Hulk and basically out punches him.
Right.
But he stops swinging his fist for, you know, by the end of this, because he doesn't have to, you know, he's in the zone at this point. Mm-hmm. And I do want to say that, for people that were really concerned that Mantis wasn't a useful character, being able to control other people's emotions is really, really handy.
Yeah.
And it's just a question of, there was an old saying, in my writing group with my comic book buddies, there's no such thing as a bad character. There's only bad stories.
Right.
And so, you know, a good writer can write a character that seems to be limited or challenged in some way, and make that character incredibly efficient. And in this case, having her basically chill Thanos out, and lull him long enough for them to actually mount a physical attack is significant. Significant.
Yeah. Glory. Yeah.
Now that said, though, they made a concerted effort to keep him from closing his fist. And so I think there is, you know, if I were writing this gauntlet in a game system, it would have a limitation where he has to close the fist. He has to sort of summon up the power. The cloak wraps around his fist, Spider-Man webs up his fist, you know, so they were doing a good enough job. So even if Thanos wanted to use the gauntlet to just bat these fleas away, he was being effectively prevented from doing that by their various coordinated attacks.
Nonstop assault and Drax cutting him in the knees and them dropping things on him and Iron Man blasting him.
By the way, talk about that entire sequence on Titan is my absolute favorite action sequence of the entire movie, even over Wakanda, over everything else. How wonderfully intense, especially the last confrontation between Iron Man and Thanos was spectacular. I cannot think of another movie that has something that made me just, oh wow, like look at that. I mean, oh my Lord, the choreography, the shots, the decision to close up here, medium shot here, let's cut here, and all the stuff that Iron Man is doing, planting his feet on the ground and doing that extra double punch thing from his, I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing.
It was a heck of a fight, and leads up to this great moment where they finally have him. Folks, they've got him. Mantis has got him subdued. They're holding him down. Spider-Man and Iron Man are prying the gauntlet off his arm. Quill, they've all been doing their bit. I mean, Star-Lord plants a bomb on his back and flips him off before disappearing into a magic circle. I mean, things like that. It's just so great, right?
Yeah.
But here we've got Thanos, and of course, Quill shows up to mock him, and of course, it leads to the whole Gamora thing, which I get it. I get it. But you blew it, Quill. You blew it, Star-Lord. I mean, okay, I get it. I'm sorry you lost your girlfriend. But can we hold that off a little bit until the gauntlets? I mean, it was coming off. It was coming off of his arm. And here's another thing. Hey, Drax, you got those knives? Just freaking cut his arm off.
The Guardians have always been selfish, and Quill proves that he is his father's son. His ego won't allow him it's all about he's all about the id. It's needs and wants. It sucks. You know, he's a deeply flawed character. We can't help who we love.
And of all the people that were going to fuck that scene up, of course it was going to be Star-Lord. And so again, that is a story decision that does not happen simply because it's required in the plot, although that it is, but that is a decision that says, all right, we have to have this happen. Of course, Star-Lord. Star-Lord will be the one very keeping in character that would fuck this moment up.
Well, and it makes sense. I mean, he loves Gamora.
He just realized she's gone.
Yeah, and I get it, but just another 5 minutes? Another 5 minutes. That's all I'm saying here, folks.
And by the way, we skipped over this moment, but I want to point to the brilliance of this moment, and it's going to directly impact what happens in this scene that I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. But when Doctor Strange is sitting there in his little meditation pose, and his little head is Jacob's laddering, you know, vibrating everywhere, and Mantis is like, does he always do that? And then he comes to, and he's like, I have seen 14 million different outcomes, and we win in one.
Right.
And it is that moment. It is that moment that he decides, and you can see it. You can see it in Doctor Strange's face when he decides, I'm going to have to give Thanos the Time Stone. This is something I'm going to have to do because that one where we win, I give him the Time Stone. He's seen it. He knows exactly what's going
to
happen.
That one where we win, we need Tony Stark.
Right.
And in order to save Tony Stark, he says, take it.
Correct. But wouldn't it be one both, right? He would know both. He would see that
one or the other.
We need Tony Stark, and Thanos is going to get the Time Stone. This is the end game, guys. This is the only way we can possibly win.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a fantastic, again, for the Sorcerer Supreme to look into all of these realities and go, okay, I basically know now what we need to do.
Yeah.
Right. Without speaking saying, of, hey, fellas, I know what we need to do. Right. You know.
Speaking of Iron Man, I love that scene too. Also, you know, with we're going to call Star-Lord's bad day, his horrible fuck up. I love the scene because Iron Man reacts. Now let's go back to Civil War when he watches the video of the Winter Soldier murdering his parents and loses his mind. Yep. He recognizes that immediately and he goes to Quill and says, no, don't do this.
Right.
Because he knows what happened. He felt that. He was there. He experienced the exact same emotion and he's trying to talk him down. Yep. It doesn't work, but he recognizes that.
Again, let's once more acknowledge the brilliance. He was exactly the character that was needed in that scene to tell Quill those very words because of what we know about Tony's past.
Right.
So it had to be Tony. None of this happened by accident. This was all planned and written, and kudos to those writers because, man, they made right choice after correct choice after correct choice. I was like, wow.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing achievement because really it all worked together and it was perfection.
It is character driven. It's driven by the characters that we know. It uses what we know about those characters to make those decisions. None of what they do is contrary to who they are, what they've experienced, what we know. I mean, it's perfect. It is literally perfect. I just really, really enjoyed it.
So after Iron Man is mortally wounded, although, and I thought he was dead, but he used some spray, to seal his wound.
The nanotech.
Oh, what I loved about that fight, too, was like, you know, he'd be hit so hard, part of his nanotech armor would dissolve and then immediately reform again.
Yeah.
Like seconds before a second punch landed, I was just like, oh, God, cover your face, Iron Man, because here he comes again.
That fight was so well done. Yeah.
So Iron Man, Doctor Strange gives him the Time Stone, spare his life, no tricks, gives him the Time Stone, Thanos leaves, stranding all of our heroes on Titan, where effectively they've lost.
Right.
Now we're back in Wakanda. Things are going bad for our heroes. The Outriders are overwhelming them. Who should show up but the God of Thunder with his brand new weapon and and we didn't talk about this, but he's got a mechanical eye that Rocket gave him. So with both his eyes, ostensibly a brand new lightning spitting deadly weapon of the gods, and he just cleans the field with him. And even and Bruce Banner's reaction to, oh, you guys are in trouble now. Because here is Thor, the God of Thunder.
Just like with Captain America, by the way, Joseph, here's another fantastic introduction into the battle of a character that we all know and love. And it is, I myself in my mind before Banner had said it was thinking, oh, you guys are fucked now.
Yeah. Right.
Cause look who's here. It's the God of Thunder.
And I was kind of hoping that they would play the Immigrant Song again. I just wanted that, just a little refrain, I get that the score was very somber, but I was like, a little heavy metal for this would have been pretty cool because he goes into it's definitely that epic it's the Thor of legend, guy who strafes the battlefield and takes out legions, and I love the fact that he's actually got a number in his head. He knows how many foes he's killed. It's perfect.
Yeah.
And then of course,
by the way, hearkening again to the beginning of that character in the very first Thor movie, where we see him unleashing that on the Frost Giants. Yeah. So we know what he's capable of. We've seen it. He smashes the hammer down on the ground, and literally dozens and dozens of giants around him are thrown off their feet and disintegrate. And you're just like, wow.
That's some power there, man. Yeah. And he screams, bring me Thanos, or, where is Thanos? And he's hell-bent, folks. Remember, he's on a mission. Of course, he brings Groot and Rocket with him, Tree and Rabbit, which leads to a great exchange, missing my companions, Tree and Rabbit, and I am Groot, I am Steve Rogers.
Yes.
That's a great moment.
I do like the reunion with Cap and Thor where they compare. I see you've got my haircut. I see you've got my beard. Very funny. Yeah. And just a nice touch of levity in this very somber setting
in an otherwise very grim situation.
Yeah. I felt for them, but truly not until Thanos shows up did I think that any of our heroes were going to die at the hands of the Outriders. Mind you, even Proxima Midnight and Corvus Glaive, who we thought was dead, but oh, those tricky children of Thanos, they fooled our heroes, sending Corvus Glaive into the Wakandan palace to attack the Vision there and get that soul, and the Mind Stone from him. So it was a bit of a bait and switch. But, even with all that going on, I kind of thought our heroes would pull out of this. When I see Black Widow going after Proxima Midnight again, toe-to-toe, and then being assisted by the...
Okoye, yeah.
Oh, my Okoye. God. Was that not just the great, best?
Yeah.
Okoye and Black Widow side by side.
Yeah, it was a great...
I was like, oh, this is delish. Yeah.
And then, of course, the Scarlet Witch shows up, and the great line is, why were we not using her, or why were we keeping her off the battlefield, because look what she's doing. She's lifting gigantic, drill machines. She throws Proxima Midnight into one of the gears of that thing and it shreds her. It's just, awesome. They're like, well, why weren't you in this battle again? Because, you're really, really useful. Yeah. Corvus Glaive and Vision are battling now by themselves, and Corvus Glaive has got the upper hand. Vision's weakened. He's not in any condition to really fight. And once again, same situation. Here comes Captain America. Comes up and just goes toe-to-toe with this guy. He was getting on the bottom end of that until Vision managed to get, basically paid him back for exactly what he did to him earlier. He repeats the move, stabs him from the back. And finishes off the children of Thanos. Boy, that was tough. Scarlet Witch has a choice now, folks. And Vision says, look, we've tried. It's not going to work. You need to destroy the stone. You need to do it. It's going to kill me. And what a sweet line. What a sweet line. You can never hurt me. Yeah. All I'm going to feel is you.
Yep.
I mean, it's sweet. It's a sweet line. Again, they don't do anything for me, folks. I'm sorry. I just something about that relationship. I'm like, oh, that's cute. But it's a sweet line.
Yeah, no, so, I bought it. That was a really wonderful moment between those two characters.
So she starts to do that, but then, of course, here comes Grimace. He shows up again.
Yep. And this time with the Time Stone in hand, he's able to wind it back and interrupt the whole procedure.
Yeah, after beating Captain America, Falcon, Groot, everyone who stands in his way, almost like... very much, again, I'm reminded of movies. That's what I do. Strangely, I'm reminded of that scene in Monster Squad where Dracula is walking and doesn't break stride, walking through town square, killing cops on his way to get the amulet. He just doesn't break stride. Thanos is walking towards his goal, and people are stepping in front of him, and he's just pop, 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 pop.
Yeah.
Cap gives him some pause, which I love that moment. That was the moment that the world was afraid of. That was the moment that everyone thought,
oh, he's going to kill him. Yeah.
So even when he hits him and he punches him and knocks him down, I thought, oh, he broke his neck. Oh, that's it. He's gone. That's it. I literally got the weepies there. Yeah. But of course, he did not. Yes, Scarlet Witch destroys the stone. But Thanos pauses.
Yeah, rewinds.
He pauses, gently touches her hair as she's weeping. And says, I know how you feel, child.
Oh, right.
I know the pain that you have. Again, Thanos, you bastard, you make me like you because, the Gamora thing. And he rewinds time and has no problems plucking that stone right out of Vision's head and killing him outright, taking all the stones. Where the hell was the God of Thunder this whole time? That whole sequence, I kept thinking, any time now, Thor. Yeah. But then again, when he does show up, finally, here's the thing. He shows up in the sky and he hurls Stormbreaker at him. And Thanos uses the power of all six stones right at it, and it cuts right through it. It travels right through it and just, man, embeds right into his chest. Just bad. Yep. Oh, my God. The crowd goes crazy. Done. Oh, we did it. We did it, everyone. Thanos drops to his knees. This gigantic weapon is embedded in his chest. And, of course, Thor, instead of lopping his head off and finishing it, he's got to gloat because, of course, he's Thor. So he's got to walk up to him. And you can't gloat over a dead body. I don't care what anyone says. It's not satisfying to gloat over a dead body. You got to gloat.
He speaks from experience, folks.
Yeah. You got to gloat while they're still alive. Yeah. You know, their last moments of life that they got to have you in their face going, "I told you would die for that." You know, you got to do that. Yeah. And of course, that was his mistake. As Thanos, while he's coughing up his purple blood, he strains out the words, "You should have gone for the head."
Yeah.
Snap.
Yep.
Now, the snap heard around the universe is something that was done in the comic books. Everyone who knows the Infinity Gauntlet story in the original comic run knows the infamous snap. And the snap that ends half of all life in the universe. And just a simple snap of his fingers, folks. And it happens.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. So, surprise, we lose.
Yep.
And not only do we lose, but we get to watch characters that we've been emotionally invested in for 10 years, in some cases, literally vanish before our very eyes.
Yeah.
That ashy dust, like vampires dissolving in the sunlight.
Yeah.
It was troublesome. And of course, you know, I knew that this was probably going to happen because I know it's a two-part movie.
Yeah.
And I know in my heart of hearts that we're going to get another Black Panther movie. So when he dissolves, I'm like, well, they'll find a way to bring him back. It's not, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not until we zoom back up onto the planet that Peter grabs Tony and says, "I don't want to go."
Yeah.
And Tony lays him down and Peter apologizes and says, "I'm sorry," and disappears.
Yep.
That's when I got it. That was the gut punch because that's exactly the kind of thing that Peter would, he'd apologize for not completing, you know, his homework. I mean, that was the worst.
Yeah.
It's an emotional, it's a real gut punch.
They all go fairly quickly. They all kind of poof in the dust fairly quickly. The note that I would like to add is that Spider-Man, with his spider sense, got it a little earlier. He knew something was wrong.
I don't feel very good.
He took the longest to go because, God help him, his spider sense was telling him something's wrong. So he got scared, you know, so he had that emotional. And according to what I've read on set, he ad-libbed that whole sequence of him saying, "I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I'm sorry." That was Tom Holland, because the director just basically, the Russo brothers just said, you know, "Fight it. You don't want to go." And he, you know, he used the line, obviously, but that whole sequence apparently was him just kind of going on the emotion and making that work. And it did.
If there was ever any doubt that Tom Holland shouldn't play the part, that doubt has been laid to rest.
Oh, yeah.
He gets Peter. He understands.
Tom Holland is hands down my favorite Peter Parker, cinematic Peter Parker.
I hope they bring him back, folks. I'm kidding.
Somebody posted, I don't know if you guys saw, but somebody posted a reaction to Infinity War. And it's this, I think he's African. He's an African gentleman. And he's got this shell-shocked look on his face. And he was like, "The movie tickled me and then punched me in the gut. And then tickled me and punched me in the gut." and it is the most hilarious review. It's the whole time he's just sitting there shocked. and the combination of tickle me and then punch me in the gut.
I love it. That's fair.
There's theories out there, folks, that I've read, and I don't agree with them, but there are theories out there that go, you know what they're going to do? Marvel's going to mess with us, and the next Spider-Man movie is going to be Miles, whatever his name is, Donald Glover's character that they introduced in Homecoming. Of course it is. Of course it is. But I mean, I'm like, they could. Sure they could, but they're not going to.
Right.
Would they? Why would they do that? You know? So just for those of you, you know, keeping score at home, rest in peace, Mantis, Star-Lord, Groot, Falcon, Black Panther, Drax the Destroyer, Scarlet Witch, Vision, Gamora, Loki, Heimdall, Winter Soldier, Nick Fury, Maria Hill.
Yeah, because we'll never see any
and
of them.
And Spider-Man. So basically what we're left with, folks, is the core group of the original Avengers. Banner, Steve Rogers still alive, Iron Man still alive, all by himself with Nebula on Titan.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
With Thor. We assume Clint Barton or Hawkeye is around. We don't know. We assume that. But, you know, all the core group of Avengers are still around.
Yeah.
Which it really surprised a lot of people because everyone was all banking on the fact that, well, Captain America is going to die because, you know, Chris Evans' contract's up and Robert Downey Jr. doesn't want to do it anymore. So he's obviously going to, you know, they pulled the old wool over our eyes. That doesn't mean that they're not going to die in the second movie, sacrificing themselves or whatever to get everyone else back.
That's where I'm expecting the real deaths to happen, is in the second movie.
Right.
But we'll see. I mean, but yeah, clearly there's going to be another Guardians of the Galaxy movie. There's going to be another Spider-Man movie. There's going to be another Black Panther movie. So we know they're coming back. I am really curious to see how they come back. What is it that the Russo brothers are going to give us that I'm sure will be satisfying, that will reverse all of that damage. And by the way, after all that happens and the audience shocked and everyone's disappearing, to show Thanos walking up and sitting down and just looking at the sunset and smiling. Again, talk about the perfect ending for that movie, for that character, for what that character has achieved. And I can think of no other movie that ends with the villain sitting down, sighing, I did it, and just smiling and looking up at the sunset,
enjoying his cup of Folgers on the porch of his cabin.
It's general. It's General Foods International coffee.
That's
it's
true. Not that's true. But did you guys notice the Easter egg of the Easter egg of his armor as the Scarecrow sitting in his front yard?
Oh no, I didn't see that.
You didn't see that?
No, I missed that.
When he walks out of the cabin and he sits down in the front yard, is a Scarecrow with his armor hanging on it.
Oh,
just like
my
in the
God,
comic.
I did not even notice that. There's a reason for me to go see it again. Yeah. Yes.
Well, let me offer something up to the listeners of the Gentleman Nerds. Okay. And it's merely this. There's about a half a dozen loopholes in the script that any of which would be possible for them to use to sort of bring some of the characters or all the characters back or start the chain of events with bringing one character back and then another or whatever it is. And for the six loopholes that are in the movie, there's probably some that we haven't thought of yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Remember they've called Captain Marvel at this point.
Yes.
And we have the promise of Adam Warlock from the Guardians 2, which may or may not have an impact on the fourth Avengers movie. Who knows?
Right.
So we don't know anything. Ant-Man and the Wasp and Hawkeye will probably be in this one. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I want to be very clear about this. Avengers Infinity War does not owe you a hug. Okay.
Yeah.
Your fan theories are just that, theories.
Yep.
And I know that some of you, Star Wars, Last Jedi, like to. I know that some of you like to lay a lot of ground on this one theory and then get mad when that theory doesn't come to pass.
And by the way, I do have something to say about The Last Jedi. I'm glad you brought it up. But go ahead, finish, Mark, and then I want to make a very important point. Go ahead.
But the thing is. It, when you do that and then you get mad because the way they did it was not the way that you thought it should be done in your head, they're not obligated to match the movie in your head. They're not obligated to listen to a fan theory. And so I just – it's better for everybody, especially because contracts are still being negotiated and nobody knows – how much of Fox Disney will get to keep, it's better for everybody to just kind of let this one wash over you, because we're not going to know until 2019. And any hand-wringing that you want to do in the meantime is only going to wind you up and potentially ruin what could be the next great Marvel movie for you. So my advice to you all is to take a deep breath, take a step back, and just go, hey, we've got an Ant-Man and Wasp movie coming up in 2 months. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Ant-Man and the Wasp, it has been revealed, takes place immediately after Civil War, so before the events of Infinity War. And, of course, Captain Marvel takes place in the 90s, before the events of Infinity War. So both of these movies coming out, folks, are prior to this.
Correct.
So it will affect nothing of the Infinity War shock and awe that we have. Right. Speaking of shock and awe, our robot bouncer
is giving me the red eye. Not before I make this very, very important point.
I'll do my best to hold him back.
Okay, thank you. I am so glad that Mark brought up The Last Jedi, because how I wish that the Russo brothers could have sat down with Rian Johnson over beers or coffee and said, hey, buddy, we want to share with you how you can subvert the expectations of an audience and still remain true to the characters. Let's sit down and you and us have a really deep, meaningful conversation. And maybe next time when you're doing a movie like that, you'll remember all of our sage wisdom, because this movie works because it subverts your expectations and absolutely remains true to every single one of the characters, and never ever makes us think, well, they wouldn't do that, or what's going on with that character. They act precisely as we have seen them act. They act precisely as we are guessing they will act, and everything felt true and real. And even though we were at the end, we're like, whoa, it was a pleasant surprise. My biggest complaint with The Last Jedi, which it did not do what Infinity War did, I wish it had, is not the events that subverted our expectations. I think that's great. The fact that, and regardless of how many apologists say that Mark Hamill's perfectly fine now with Luke Skywalker and how he was portrayed, no bullshit. Look at all the interviews with Mark Hamill, and you'll be convinced that to this day, he thinks that was absolutely the wrong thing to do with his character. And that's all I wanted. Do not subvert our expectations about who or what a character is. Subvert our expectations of what to expect in the story, but remain true to the character that we have come to know and love and read books and books about and comics and see in other movies. Then it's a win-win. You will not have very many. There will always be people who complain, but you'll have less people complaining. If you give them the Luke Skywalker they pretty much know, but you give it to them in such a way that they go, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming.
Right.
And that is I'm so glad Infinity War came out, and I'm so glad it did what it did, because I could finally go, aha, that's their point. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. Tony was Tony. Star-Lord was Star-Lord. Captain America was Captain America. There was never a moment where I went, oh, well, that's interesting. They decided to go this direction with a character, which is totally different from what we've seen before. You know, Thor didn't become a cowering, sniveling little guy, and I don't know, I don't want to fight, you know, Thanos. And, you know, none of the characters were anything except what we had come to know, love, and expect. But the movie, wow, what happened in the movie left us going, oh, wow, we can't wait to see what comes next. Well, so there, gentlemen.
I am on the phone right now, and I will insist that Rian Johnson come and give Aaron a hug, because
or no. Convince Rian Johnson to sit down with the Russo brothers over beers or some coffee, and just to listen to how they handle beloved characters in an unexpected way. I would pay for his airplane flight to go meet them. That would be great. So anyway,
your
mileage may vary, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, the opinions of the gentlemen nerds are not reflective on all three of us. But at the same time, I understand what you're saying. I do think that people gave the Last Jedi a lot of grief for reasons that I thought was a little perplexing. But that's my opinion, and I could be wrong. Mark, you were going to say something?
Oh, just that. I just wanted to say that as franchise building goes, this 10-year experiment is going to go down as being not only one of the most significant, but it's going to be a game changer. It will be a game changer going forward because it has rewritten what is possible for a superhero movie. Yeah. The Marvel superhero movies are their own subgenre now. And everybody over at the DC camp has been very quiet, and I suspect it's because, and I say this with zero acrimony here, out of a genuine desire to have the DC characters portrayed successfully on film, but they've got to figure out their way forward to do this because the stakes have been set very high. And
absolutely. No,
James Cameron has to say.
Yeah, the DC absolutely must learn from Marvel's example. And by the way, as witness in Wonder Woman, we can see that DC can do it. They are capable of giving us a movie that is inspiring and wonderful and full of action and
right.
You know, so they can do it. They can do it.
Step one is to keep Zack Snyder away from stuff. So
he has been let go. So yes. I agree. That is a good first step.
Mentioned James Cameron. Let me just say this out loud and in public. James Cameron can sit on a bag of fire and fart. I don't because
wow,
that is some. You know what, James? Go. I love you. Go make your movie. Right. You don't. There's no need for you to throw any rocks in this house.
Well,
right?
Apparently, when the Avatar sequels come out, we're going to forget all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's going to be that good.
There is room in the universe for a successful line of DC movies, for a successful line of Marvel.
Not in Cameron's universe.
But I think Cameron will learn that the rising tide lifts all ships. And the more people see the wonderful, successful Marvel movies, the more they're going to want that elevated level of storytelling. And if Cameron can produce, great. He's gonna make bank. The Marvel movies are only helping him. I want a great Aquaman movie. I want a great DC Captain Marvel movie. I want a great Wonder Woman 2 because there's room but yes, oh gosh, learn, study these movies.
You got to find your own way forward.
Yeah.
Because the Marvel way is its own way. And that's what they need to do is they need to figure out how to tell DC Comics stories in cinematic format.
Yeah.
They've had great success with Batman and they've had limited success with some of the other stuff. So it's going to be a question of making that leap. Marvel has successfully converted their formula. Let me just make a quick Joseph, the robot is standing right behind you.
Don't make eye contact.
Holy crap. Contact. Look, let us all have a final thought. We better get out of here.
The
blades are about to come up.
Oh my God. Okay, my final thought real quick is by the time you guys hear this podcast, I'll have my 5-part The Children of Generation X articles on my blog, Mark the Aging Hipster at blogspot.com. You can just search for Finn's Wake and it'll pop right up. The Children of Generation X, my thesis on the Marvel movies and how they all interrelate and why it's significant and why they are all the Children of Generation X. It's a very long read, but there's some good stuff in it, and I would love anybody to read these and throw me some comments. That'd be great.
Excellent. Yeah, and I can go on record as recommending that. I read it so far, every word he's written, and folks, it's it's better than just a few good things. I'll put it that way. Yep. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Okay, without further ado, The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and is written by... See, I'm doing the credits. Get away. And written by Aaron D'Arriba, Mark Finn, Ben Gibbs, and Joseph Fotinos, with additional material by Joe Simon, Jack Kirby, and Stan the Man Lee.
Excellent.
Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, and The Gentleman Nerds mascot, still nameless, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, back up, buddy. And once again, our special guest bartender was Marvel's Weasel, soon to be seen in Deadpool 2. Our sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer, and the man we all pray never gets superpowers, is Aaron D'Arriba. The Gentleman Nerd's attorney is Dr. Gonzo. Red Skull is played by Ross Marquand in Infinity War and not Hugo Weaving. Mark Farnash, however, is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Rustix Interactive. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher D'Arriva. Please join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open, and always remember to tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. I'm Joseph Otinos, reminding you all that now and forever, Red Skull lives.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, great. Gents, that was